Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Tuesday, May 23rd. We have a good show for you today. My name is Magnus Tiefold. I'm your host for this hour. And we're going to be bringing you a couple of reprise interviews for today. Host Vivian Frutal, who was looking after this time slot for about 5 months, was here temporarily from Germany, and she's returned to her home country now. We're currently sort of doing some recruiting of new summer folks to bring in on Speak Up, not only on Tuesday, but throughout the week. So we're expecting a lot of interesting things to be coming your way very soon. But in the meantime, we have some great interviews from the past. And today we're going to bring you an interview that Vivian did for Black History Month back in February. But of course, the issues we talk about in Black History Month aren't only relevant then, and are in fact are important throughout the year. And so we're going to replay this interview that she did in February with Dr. Yebom Sophie Jackson, who is the VP for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion at Simon Fraser University. And this is a pretty extensive and wide-ranging interview. I hope you enjoy it. After that, we'll be bringing you a feature on traditional Chinese medicine with an interview with Raymond Fan, conducted by Chris Spangenberg. So that's all coming up in the next hour. But here is Vivian's interview with Dr. Yebom Sophie Jackson, VP for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion at Simon Fraser University.
We are CJSF 90.1 FM, and welcome here to the interview with the Vice President of EID, so Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Thank you for having me. I am Dr. Yebom Gilpin Jackson, and I am currently Vice President, People, Equity, and Inclusion at Simon Fraser University. I'm also a community member here in Vancouver for over 24 years in the Black Vancouver community, and spend a lot of time in community thinking and talking about Black History Month. So I'm happy to be here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're here for Black History Month. We're almost at the end of this month, and we had so many great events happening here. And we especially met at the opening ceremony, so the very first day of Black History Month, where you hold a great speech and said a few words about Black History Month, and I was very impressed by that. So for the people that don't know what Black History Month is or what the Black History Month is about, could you explain this for us?
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you for your kind words as well. Black History Month is really a month that is set aside to recognize Black accomplishments and Black excellence and Black history here in Canada and around the world. In particular, because historically, over time, especially in the Americas and the diaspora, the contributions of Black community were often erased from whether that is history or literature, or generally not well represented in the sort of general population. So Black History Month really has come about fundamentally to address that. And I think if anyone is paying attention right now to the world, we see ways in which some of that kind of erasure could happen again in this time if we do not continue practices such as Black History Month. So I want to recognize that Currently, there are a number of countries that recognize Black History Month. It started, and this is important just to note, that it started in the U.S., in the United States, specifically because a scholar, Carter G. Woodson, was trying to do exactly what I just said, making sure that there was space to collect and share the history of Black people in America, but also Black accomplishments around the world. And so from that time, it's been recognized in Canada, in Ireland, in Germany, in UK and France. And I just found out that continentally on the African continent, as of 2020, a number of African nations, and Africa does have 54 countries, 55, depending on how you're counting, have also taken on recognizing Black History Month. Mm-hmm. So that's an overview.
Yeah. And thank you for explaining this for us. And why do you think it is so important that we celebrate this month across the world and that different countries celebrate this month today?
Thank you. That's fantastic question. I think for many of the reasons that I just described in terms of recognizing that Black people are inherited. Black history is the history of the world, right? Just like any other history of any people group is part of the history of our shared humanity, so is Black history. And so it's really critical that Black history doesn't continue to be marginalized or seen as this sort of thing that we just do because a group of people have asked to be better recognized in society. I think for Black peoples and for every equity-deserving group, part of what's important is this recognition as members of society that are contributing, have always contributed, and continue to contribute to society in meaningful ways. You know, for example, we are in the United Nations International Decade for Peoples of African Descent that started in 2015 and goes until 2024. And just like Black History Month, it's not like work on Black history or recognition of any form needs to end in 2024. So let me start by saying that. I always say for me, Black history is February and forever. But the reason I'm referring to the United Nations decade is the theme of that decade is recognition, justice, and development. And I think it's important because for far too long, the contributions of Black people have not been recognized, hence recognition. There are many reasons. I'm sure listeners know well some and encourage folks that are curious about the social justice issues surrounding Black people globally to read up, learn, and just be aware that there are many, many, many historical and current ongoing issues of social justice impacting Black communities globally. And then, of course, as we all want for all of us, just that continued movement towards progress and development for our whole human collective, and certainly for people groups such as Black people that have often been left behind or been seen as people groups that are there mostly to serve the global collective and not given the self-determination, the agency, or even the opportunity to use resources that have come from Black peoples of the African continent for the development of African peoples. And so that's why months like Black History Month is important, just to raise that awareness and spread that education. I want to recognize that there are over 200 million people that identify as being of African descent in the Americas alone. The largest African diaspora is found in Latin America and the Caribbean, where estimates reach 150 million. And of course, there are 1.4 billion Africans on the African continent. And we know that projections are that by the end of this time, by the end of this century, by 2070 and beyond, that there will be, that the population of Africa is going to continue to grow and nearly double and move towards being the largest, if not one of the largest by population.
Wow. Okay. Very interesting to hear. And thank you for sharing all of these information with us. And each Black History Month has a different theme. So this year's theme is resistance. And you just went into like a little bit of detail into that. But I want to know, why do you think this year's theme is resistance? And why is it so important that we resist?
Yeah, and I think, just to speak more generally in terms of the theme of resistance, I think for equity deserving groups and for groups, I would say more broadly, that have experienced social marginalization, the idea of resistance has always been core, and I would say synonymous in a lot of ways with liberation. So the idea generally of resistance is to resist. I think simplistically, in where I want to focus today is resist absorbing the popular narratives, the narratives that are not narratives of Black people's own creation, for example, resisting that narrative as the reality or the way that things should be for Black people, because those narratives have oftentimes not been created or written by Black peoples themselves and not designed for the liberation of Black people. So I think, you know, there are many that have always talked about the need to think about resistance as a form of, as an integral part of the liberation and transformation of Black people. And we're talking specific about the social condition of Black people. So I want to be clear that this is about socially the constructs that have been designed that do not support the fulsome nature of Black identities, Black contributions, Black people's place in the world. The idea of resistance is to resist that. And so oftentimes I think people view this as negatively for my purposes and for our conversation. I'm seeing this as a positive construct, transforming the construct of narratives that have been forced on Black people and resisting them to show and portray other narratives, fuller narratives. Many will know Chimamanda Adichie's very famous TED Talk on the danger of a single story.
Oh, yeah.
It's about widening the narrative. It's about being wide-eyed and clear about the multiple, complex, intersectional narratives of Black people, like every other human group in our society, and using that as the lens through which Black people are seen, heard, and recognized in society.
Mm-hmm. And how do you resist?
Yeah. And I mean, I'll take the opportunity, because I mentioned a lot of words just now. I think I want to anchor it again for listeners that are aware of Bell Hooks, rest in power. She passed away very recently, just an educator in this space that spoke about these issues and wrote about these issues from the positionality of a Black scholar and a Black woman in America. And certainly her writings have impacted Black peoples around the world. There's a something Bell Hooks wrote about this that I would like to read, if that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
For the audience. She talks about marginality as a site of resistance. And I've often broadened that to talk about marginality as a site of transformation. So I'll read to you something, the quote. It goes like this: understanding marginality as position and place of resistance is crucial for oppressed, exploited, colonized people. If we only view the margin as sign marking the condition of our pain and deprivation, then a certain hopelessness and despair, a deep nihilism, penetrates in a destructive way the very ground of our being. This is a response from the space of my marginality. It is a space of resistance. It is a space I choose. This is an intervention. I am writing to you, this was Bell Hooks writing, I am speaking from a place in the margin where I am different, where I see things differently. A message from that space in the margin that is a site of creativity and power, that inclusive space where we recover ourselves, where we move in solidarity to erase the category of colonized and colonizer, marginality as a site of resistance. Enter that space. Let us meet there. Enter that space. We greet you as liberators. I use that quote often to talk about to global Africans and Black people to engage marginality as a site of resistance as well as transformation. And I just want to end there to say, for me, the way this quote ends, talking about the fact that when we engage from the margins and when others meet us, we are meeting at the center. We're meeting metaphorically. I have a chapter I wrote about meeting on the bridge, on the metaphorical bridge, to create a better future and humanity for everyone. It's the reminder that the ability for Black peoples to resist and the ability for all others to join in that resistance to the narratives that we may all have been used to, mm-hmm. including Black peoples ourselves, transforms the entire society for the better.
Yeah.
And it's that reminder, this is about transforming all of us for the better. So yeah. we don't look at any one people group in negative ways that are destructive to that people group and therefore to all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And does she inspire you the most when it comes to resistance, or do you have anyone, or is there anyone else that you are inspired by?
Oh, I am inspired by so many in the space of my work and writings. I mean, bell hooks as an educator, mm-hmm. as a scholar, for sure. I am inspired by Black writers who have resisted simply by writing and writing about different experiences, right? Mm-hmm. I already evoked Chimamanda as a present day mm-hmm. writer. I know many see her and think about her in terms of her work in feminism writ large, but her work is first as a writer and an author who wrote from the frame of different lenses to African and mm-hmm. Black identities, for example. I'm inspired by African and Black leaders mm-hmm. that continue, and I too many to name. There's the traditional ones and the current ones that to point to, but leaders who again resist just by being present and coming to leadership tables that are very difficult to be at from the position of marginality, and yet being there to share a different perspective, because hopefully it changes the narrative.
Yeah.
It makes for better policies for all of us. It makes for a better future for all of us.
Mm-hmm. And you are a writer yourself, right? And you refer to a book you wrote. What is this book and what's the book about, so that I can refer to it on my show?
Oh, thank you so much. What I'd like to share. So I wrote three creative so fiction pieces,
oh, wow.
of short stories. And so two are short stories and mm-hmm. one is flash fiction. And they actually really were grounded and centered in the kind of conversation we're having about global African, as I like to call it, and Black identities. So the books are called Identities, Ancestries, and Destinies.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And they all center these kinds of issues mm-hmm. around Black identity and leadership. I'm also one of the co-editors mm-hmm. and the initiator of a project called We Will Lead Africa mm-hmm. and a collective that's becoming a network and a collective called We Will Lead Africa that really was about asking everyday African leaders, as mm-hmm. we call them, to submit their stories of leadership. And then we'll collate these into book volumes. And there are currently three book volumes, We Will Lead Africa book volumes, mm-hmm. just again, sharing narratives of African leadership. Often the narrative of African leadership is so skewed. Again, one of these leaders I admire is Mia Motley, who is, you know, the leader of Barbados mm-hmm. In this moment. And, you know, she has spoken about when we talk about leadership in African or so-called underdeveloped nations, you know, we're quick to go to narratives of corruption. Mm-hmm. And part of what me and my colleagues that started collecting the everyday African leadership narratives wanted to do was to share. We know so many phenomenal African leaders, both in the mainstream sense of this person is a great leader, and in the sense of phenomenal, because they're awesome beyond that. and whose work was not getting recognized, whose name, whose perspectives as African leaders was, in our view, invisible from literature on African leadership. Mm-hmm. And so part of what we took on was collecting these stories and just sharing them.
Oh,
again, just sharing
yeah.
so that people can own their own narrative. narratives.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing work. Thank you for doing that. And I will definitely take a look on your books and we'll have a little sneak peek in my show next week, which I'm very excited for. And I'm also wondering, so I'm a white person, and as a white person, how can I help, or how can I support the Black community better, and how can I help the Black community to resist?
Thank you for that question and the intent I hear behind it. I think that this, you know, active allyship is the summary that I will start with. But I think it shows up in different ways. And this is partly the challenge of this conversation. The issues that we face as Black community exist at the individual interpersonal level, at the sort of group organizational, sort of different social group levels, and then at the societal levels. And I want to say to anyone as an individual, if you are not a Black identifying person as an individual, know that you are not personally responsible for the systemic challenges we face, but you certainly, in your thinking, in your being, and in actions you take now, are part of the solution that we holistically need. But I say that because I think often there's a certain burden that comes with, and I've talked to many groups where we've had this conversation candidly, there's a certain burden that comes with feeling responsible, feeling those normal human being feelings of guilt and shame, and feeling therefore helpless. Like I just read from bell hooks, you know, part of resistance is freeing us up to move towards transformation and not be stuck in ways that don't help us move forward. So I say that to then characterize that what you can do individually is read, learn, listen to Black community about what is needed now, learn about Black history, learn about Black accomplishments, and be part of those individual interpersonal conversations that shift the conversation within your own communities, right? Many, many, many are not aware. Folks in Black community, we're not aware of our own history because we were taught. I went, for example, to my family's from Sierra Leone, and my family moved back there when I was a child. So I went to elementary and secondary school on a very British colonial educational system. So there's a lot about my history, Black history in general, and African history that I learned on my own, right? So this is a recognition that we're all in this. We must all educate ourselves, learn for the purposes of challenging. That's part of resistance. If you want to be part of it, challenge the status quo. Refer people to go learn and read. So that's one. I think at the group level, it is standing for inclusive ways of being part. Anyone can do that, right? Anyone can notice. And again, it's so insidious that I have been part of groups where I didn't notice practices that did not promote equitable process or were not diverse enough or inclusive enough, whether for Black community members or other community members. So it is really being attentive and noticing and asking questions, challenging the status quo, and going through the right channels. And I say that because I think, again, in the emotion that these conversations can often evoke, you know, a lot of people can just come out trying to work for change, but not doing that in a way that could productively lead to that change. So also educating ourselves on, you know, how does this process change in an organization? How does this practice change? How does this policy change? Who is the right person with the decision-making authority to change this? And how do I get an audience with them in order to change this piece? And knowing that those things can take time, because again, that individual, for example, who might be the leader with power authority, they're not working in a vacuum. They're working in a system. Maybe this rule has been there forever and has not been examined. So I just call also for patience for those in Black communities and outside Black communities, not patience like forever, because this work is work that should have been done a long time ago. But in terms of working with and alongside people that may be in the authority roles to make changes, being there to support moving the conversation forward and accountability, not giving up, but also understanding how things work and how things change. If something has not been looked at for 100, 200, 300, 400 years, it is not reasonable to say, I need you to change this and I need you to change it tomorrow. Sometimes some conversations need to happen, and it's just an awareness of that. Again, to take away the charge and the burden is why I'm sharing this. And I would say the last thing is to understand that these are systemic and structurally embedded discriminatory practices and oppressive practices that have built, again, over 100, 200, 300, 400 plus years, and recognizing that every little bit matters. So if there is that opportunity to write to a government official, if that's opportunity to be part of a broader coalition, if there's that opportunity to be part of systemic change agendas, whatever that looks like, however that looks like for you, whether at the community level, at an institutional level, at a broader sort of civil society level, then do engage. That is meaningful. Again, knowing that it takes time, but everything matters. I'll end by saying my background is in leadership and organization development that includes systems change. And in that field, we talk about the butterfly effect, that oftentimes, or others in regular language nowadays, people talk about the tipping point. Right? And all that to say that systems don't change overnight. Every little action matters. And eventually these add up together to that tipping point, that butterfly effect where, boom, all of a sudden we realize we're in a different era, we're in a different way of being. And I think the world is already moving towards that different way of being holistically. I think we can all feel it. So just an encouragement that every bit matters and we're moving further and further towards that equity-centered future.
Yes, definitely. And it is a journey. And yeah, as you already said, everything, every little thing matters. And also engaging with community. So I spoke with Tiara last week and she is amazing. And yeah, we talked about different things that you can do for Black History Month. It can be, I mean, I attended a soca dance workshop last week and it was amazing. And talking about the butterfly effect, I can really feel it because I told my friends about it and they were very interested and we all joined and it was amazing. Before that, I attended the opening ceremony, so I can definitely recommend engaging and check out the SFU Soca website and their Instagram. They have so many events happening, especially this week, and I will definitely attend some more events. So just engaging with community and yeah, speak with the people and yeah, talk with them. And is there anything else happening in Vancouver specifically for Black History Month?
There are always many, many events happening across the Lower Mainland. I've attended so many. I know, like, there's even this week, there's a Black in BC event in Surrey. I would just encourage folks, go check out Black History Month events, whether that's on Facebook or Eventbrite or your favorite place to look for events. Unfortunately, there used to be a listing I was aware of that used to list a whole bunch of events. It's one of those listings that kind of went away a little bit with COVID, and I haven't seen it come back yet. But right now, I would just say follow Black community groups on Instagram and look up Black events on Instagram, and you'll be sure to find something. There's something for everybody. I think I'll concur what you said. Engaging with people and the communities that you want to be an active ally. Some will say accomplice, but I much prefer active ally because, you know, sometimes accomplice feels like we're up to something wrong, right? We're up to everything that's right in this conversation in terms of resistance and transformation. And so really that call for just engage with communities, learn. Learn first. You don't have to show up and try to take over, because that's part of what we need to be different, is to make space for, you know, as our Indigenous colleagues have popularized, nothing about us without us. This is a frame also from my leadership and organization development scholarship. Nothing about us without us is a popular frame. So learn with people and then ask people how you can help.
Definitely. And is there anything I've missed asking about or that you would like to add as we almost close out here for today?
I just think, I said this in the middle of our conversation, but February and forever.
Yeah.
Like you said, we're already coming to the end of Black History Month. Please, your engagement with Black community doesn't start and stop with February. It's February and forever. I think we're in a new era globally with increased awareness of the need for decolonization broadly, whether that is standing in Indigenous solidarity, here in Canada and honoring the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples around the world, whether that's with Black communities, whether that's with our Asian communities, whether that's being aware of the rising anti-Semitism and being an active ally in all those spaces, whether in the anti-racism space or anti-oppression more broadly, our friends in the disability community, the 2S LGBTQIA plus communities. There is a lot. There is more than enough for all of us to engage in and with to ensure we're working towards an equity-centered future for all.
Yes, very true. And coming to my last and most important question, what does Black History Month mean for you?
For me personally, it's very simple. Black History Month for me means doing everything I can to write, speak, and engage the world in a way that will make it just a little better, like a little in increments towards that complete equity-centered future for my children. Mm-hmm. I often share that I was okay navigating the world as a Black person and a Black woman, as an African, as an immigrant, as someone that has been a refugee. I was okay with all that on my own. And when I started a